Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. And Matt, this is the second part of a two-part special we're doing, and I realized only today that we did not do any sort of cliffhanger, and I feel bad about that. Do you want to do one real quick? Do you want to do one? Like a cliffhanger to like get listeners excited about what we're doing on today's show?
Okay, sure. Oh no, a giant spider.
Oh no! Be with us next time for the conclusion of the 2017 Marriage and Moving Panel President Special. We now rejoin the 2017 Marriage and Moving Panel President Special.
Oh, it's just a normal size spider. It was right up in front of the camera. It was forced perspective.
I don't know that the camera is a factor in this purely audio medium. But Matt, how are you?
I'm okay. I guess by the camera, I mean my own eyes.
Yeah. You know, the old cameras. The old head cameras. The old facial cameras.
It's like when they call, you know, when you're playing a video game, it's hard to see. Those are referred to as camera problems, even though there's no camera in a video game.
I guess that is true. I guess that is
true. Except for in Mario 64, where the Lakitu had a camera. Hey, here's what we do on War Rocket Ajax.
Yes.
We talk about comic stuff. Now, last week and this week, we're doing something a little bit different from our regular format. Usually, we do an interview with a comics creator, and we'll do comics reviews, and Checks and Recs is a segment that we normally do. But because Chris is getting married, and by the time you hear this, he will have been married for a couple weeks. And I'm moving to a new house. We are recording some stuff in advance because we don't want you guys to go for 2 weeks without episodes of your favorite podcast. This is your favorite podcast, right? So what we're doing is we are doing 2 weeks of panel president. And if you don't know what panel president is, here's what it is. We take lists of characters from listeners. They send them to us. Then we place those characters on a huge, ever-expanding master list from best to worst. We elect the best characters and we impeach the worst characters. And as of right now, I think we're edging toward 300 characters, Chris. Is that right?
I would say edging is the word for it. We've got 217 on there right now, and maybe we can get up to, if we really put our noses to the grindstone here, maybe we can get up to 300. Maybe we can get up to 250 is what I was going to say.
Matt,
we're going to be here for the next 6 hours putting another 83 characters on this list that we've been working on for 2 years.
Well, we'll probably get to maybe 240 in this episode if we really put our minds to it. We shouldn't mess around anymore, I think. I think we should just get to ranking some characters, especially if we want to try to really expand the list. So, Chris, what do you say we just dive into some panel president lists?
I think that sounds like a dandy idea.
Chris, our first list comes from Line Stepper, Patreon supporter. He went to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kicked in the monthly amount necessary to have line stepping privileges. Josh Sinison or Sinison, I never know which one it is. And the first character on his list is Jen Walters, the She-Hulk.
You talking about the Sensational She-Hulk?
That is exactly who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Rampaging She-Hulk.
But are you talking about the Savage She-Hulk?
That's who I'm talking about.
She-Hulk's great. She-Hulk is one of the most amazing examples of a character created to secure a trademark who, like, turned out to be genuinely, like, fantastic in the end. Like, I think a lot of that comes from the fact that she plays off a completely different style of being the Hulk that Bruce Banner does. You know, I'll be completely honest, I was never, like, a huge Hulk guy. Like, I like the Hulk, but, you know, he was never, like, you know, my favorite Marvel guy. You know me, I'm a Spider-Man and Ben Grimm man, whereas the Hulk is fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, as are all, I'm going to go ahead and say it, all right-thinking people.
I would go so far as to say, and this might be sacrilege, I don't know, I would go so far as to say that I prefer She-Hulk to the Hulk.
I certainly enjoy her as much.
I enjoy She-Hulk comics way more than most Hulk comics. Like, certainly Planet Hulk is good, and a handful of Hulk stories are very good. But almost across the board, I like She-Hulk comics. And I like She-Hulk on teams. Like, she's been grossly mishandled a few times. Like, I think the Geoff Johns Avengers run is an example of that.
That was maybe the worst possible interpretation of She-Hulk. Like, I don't, like, again, I think you and I have a reputation as being dudes who don't like Geoff Johns, which is not entirely undeserved as far as our feelings on the matter are concerned. But the idea of being like, oh, Bruce Banner is a Hulk because of fear, or Bruce Banner is a Hulk because of anger, and Jen Walters is a Hulk because of fear, is just doesn't work for her character at all.
No.
Like, it doesn't work. It's not, like, that's not how she had ever been portrayed before. And in fact, the, like, fun thing about Jen, like, the thing that really works about She-Hulk, is that she's a Hulk who's not particularly bothered by being a Hulk, which you would think would ruin the premise. And it doesn't.
And she's always been the kind of Hulk, like, Bruce Banner goes all over the map, right, with what he becomes when he becomes the Hulk. Sometimes he becomes totally mindless. Sometimes he becomes childlike. Sometimes he becomes a weird Vegas grifter. And sometimes he's still Bruce Banner in the Hulk's body. Sometimes he's a smart version of the Hulk who is not Bruce Banner, who actually hates Bruce Banner. So there are all kinds of different variations on the Bruce Banner Hulk. But She-Hulk almost universally retains Jen Walters' personality to the point where she works as an attorney as She-Hulk in many of her stories, which is great.
Yeah, yeah, it really is.
Like, that's what's so great about She-Hulk is that there's a consistency of character to her that is not there for the Bruce Banner Hulk. And there's this great other thing you can do with her in addition to the superhero stories, which is the law stories, the lawyer stories.
Yeah. Which end up being always completely different from the lawyer stories you do with Daredevil.
Yeah. Because, like, she's openly She-Hulk when she's practicing law.
Yeah. I honestly feel like the when it's all said and done, even though he's been on Spider-Man for, like, fucking 10 years now, like, forever, I think when people look back on his career, the Dan Slott She-Hulk is going to be remembered as being, at pound for pound, as good as Spider-Man.
I think so. I think it's still his best work. By far.
Yeah, I mean, like, and we say that as like, I like a lot of the Spider-Man stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's maybe gone on a little too long. But yeah, generally, his Spider-Man stuff has been, at a minimum, good.
Mm-hmm.
But his She-Hulk run is fantastic. The Charles Soule She-Hulk run is really good. And even going back to the John Byrne She-Hulk stuff, those are fun comics.
She teams, like, up with Santa Claus in that one, Matt. Santa Claus is the world's greatest detective.
In many ways, those John Byrne She-Hulk stories are a precursor to what would become Deadpool.
Yeah. The fourth wall breaking, the comedic aspect, the goofy, like, I mean, you know, if there was a book out right now that was going to have its main character team up with Santa Claus because Santa Claus knows who's naughty and who's nice, it would be Deadpool. Like that's a Deadpool joke in 2017.
So I'm thinking She-Hulk maybe doesn't quite crack the top 25, but she gets real close.
So 25, we've got Rae Smuckles, aka Son of Rodney. So yeah, I don't think she's going quite that high. But you know, looking right below there, we got Commissioner James W. Gordon, who I'm a big fan of. We got Amanda Waller, who's amazing. Black Canary, who I really like, but is maybe on par. Like in terms of how strong her character is.
I would put her above Black Canary. Like Black Canary is probably my floor.
I don't think she goes above Amanda Waller.
Okay, then
like completely different kind of character, but like I don't think that happens.
Okay, then that's her spot between Amanda Waller and Black Canary.
All right. It is decreed, entering the list at number 28, She-Hulk, Jen Walters.
Next on Josh's list is Matt Murdock, the Daredevil.
Is this a lawyer list? Is that what we're doing?
No, it's just the first two.
It's kind of weird that we don't have Daredevil on this list yet. How did we get 217 characters before somebody mentioned Daredevil?
That's a good question.
Yeah, he's kind of a big one. There was a time, Matt, when Daredevil was probably my second favorite superhero.
That time being?
Oh, you know, when you're a teenager and you read Frank Miller's Daredevil for the first time.
Sure.
And also, it happens to be at a time when Daredevil is coming out and is, like, really underrated. Because my kind of real first time reading Daredevil was in that super underrated, super good. I think it kind of actually holds up, especially in the context of what, you know, Mark Waid did while he was on the book. The Carl Kiesel, Kerry Nord Daredevil run, where the idea was, okay, like, it was the first time somebody had been like, okay, we don't want to make Daredevil happy, but we don't want him to be, like, fucking miserable all the time anymore. Which is weird, because that was, like, 1998 that they were coming to this decision.
Now, that was around the same time that D.G. Chichester was writing Daredevil also.
This was after. This was the run after Chichester. So,
was it after the Daredevil armor?
Yeah, it was post Fall from Grace. Because, like, Fall from Grace at the time had become a story that was like, okay, this is as dark as we're going to get. Those fools! Little did they know. But, yeah, the sort of return to a slightly brighter version of Daredevil was Kiesel and Nord. And one of their big ideas was actually to make Mr. Hyde his arch nemesis in their run. Like, which is, like, Marvel's Mr. Hyde, which is such a weird choice. Like, again, a thing no one would do today.
Yeah, like Mr. Hyde is at best a C-lister. Yeah. Like, and always has been.
You ain't lying.
So, yeah, that was a good time for Daredevil when no one was reading it, and he then got kind of revived by the Kevin Smith run. And then there's been, like, this long, long set of numerous runs on Daredevil since then that have been very, very well regarded.
I don't know if any other character has had as many long creator-focused runs as Daredevil. Like, depending on how you define, like, a long run, like, if you're willing to go up to, like, 12 issues, then the Kevin Smith run is one. But everybody after Smith, except for, like, Bob Gale did, like, a four-part story. But everybody after that, like, I guess David Mack did the same. But then you get Bendis, you get Brubaker, you get Brubaker staying on for years and years. Then you get Waid, who's on it for a real long time. Then you get Soul. Like, and that's just, like, modern age guys. Like past, 20 years guys. Even before that, you know, Denny O'Neil was on that book forever. And obviously Frank Miller is the big one. Like, has any other character had that many, not necessarily definitive runs, but, like, long runs with like a lot of character focus.
We're also leaving out Anne Nesenti, who had
a Anne Nesenti, who, shame on me for leaving her out, because literally one of my all-time favorite comics runs is Anne Nesenti on Daredevil.
Daredevil is, to use a wrestling comparison, sort of that NXT book where creators really make their names a lot of times. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously Brubaker had a name already, and Bendis kind of already had a name. But they established themselves even further after that, you know? You know, there's a reason why Daredevil, you know, kind of has that effect with creators, I think, where they can kind of cut their teeth on that book.
I don't know if it's... Is it a matter of cutting teeth, though? Because all, like...
Yeah, I don't know if cutting teeth... make your name, I suppose. Or establish that you can do a mainstream book in a long run. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Brubaker wasn't new when he did Daredevil, and certainly neither was Wade, but, like, it does feel like they... Maybe it's... Is there something about Daredevil that, like, lends himself to, be, like, defining creators?
I think there's a variety of types of story that you can tell with Daredevil where you can go very, very dark in a way that doesn't always necessarily work with other characters. Like, you can't do that with a Spider-Man story.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also go as light as a Spider-Man story, and that can still work for Daredevil 2, which you couldn't do in a Batman book, necessarily.
I think that's kind of the definition of it, right? Like, he's the character who's most like Batman that you can actually do stuff with that you could never do with Batman.
And like, he's the character who's most like Spider-Man who you couldn't do stuff with like that with Spider-Man.
Yeah, who are like the two best.
Yeah.
Like, they're our top two guys. But, like, you can have Daredevil lose a fight in a way that you can't really have Batman lose a fight. Like, Daredevil can lose a fight and take a huge L in a way that doesn't necessarily work for Batman.
Yeah, and Daredevil can go to dark places that you can't necessarily do in a Spider-Man book.
I mean, he can go to those places that only he can go.
That's right. He's going to that place. There's a range of stories that you can tell with Daredevil that can work for that character in a way that don't really work for other characters who are more defined within certain niches.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right.
Which is a versatility that's really great. Really great about that character.
And yeah, I love him. I think he's great.
Yeah, I mean, to add to the mix that he's also a superhero with a disability, and one that dates back a really long time, that's certainly another cool thing.
Yeah, and there's so many angles to him that almost feel like it's too much, right? Because he's a superhero with a disability, but he's also got the lawyer stuff that he does. But he's also got the, like, weird Catholic guilt stuff that he does. Like, there's a lot of places to go with Daredevil that I think if there's one big problem, it's that there's maybe too much. But I think all of those stories and all of those, like, little character hooks have the potential to work really well. And we've seen them work really well in other stories. So, I mean, yeah, I think Daredevil is genuinely great. I think he's an awesome character. You know, we talked about how you can do things with him that you can't do with Spider-Man, that you can't do with Batman. He's kind of like the perfect synthesis of those two characters. But I don't think he goes where they are on the list. I don't think he goes too far down, but I don't think he goes, like, Spider-Man's our number one, Batman's our number two.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put Daredevil above, like, a Captain America. I certainly wouldn't put him above the Thing.
There was a writer who had a run after Brubaker and before Wade came on, and I couldn't remember who it was, and it was definitely Andy Diggle, who had a pretty good run there after issue 500 that was just worth noting. Anyway, I think you're right. I think he's up here, but I don't know. I mean, would he go above like a Hellboy? Because I don't know.
I mean, it's really hard. It's really hard figuring out where to put him. You know, because I like, there are Hellboy stories, you know, Daredevil stories I like as much as I like any Hellboy story. But is he a better character? The place I'm looking at, and I hate to do it because we don't have a lot of female characters in like high spots on the list, but I feel like he goes between Jughead and Squirrel Girl at number 14.
I think that might be a little too high. I think maybe he goes between...
He's real good. He's real good.
I agree with that. I think he might go between Catwoman and Batwoman.
So that would put him at number 18 on the list. That would mean that he's below a like a Magneto and a Lex Luthor. Which, you know, respectable. That would put him above Darkseid, above Destro, above Big Barda and Wonder Woman. Yeah, I think you can make a good argument for that. I do think neither of those two characters would exist in their current forms, would exist at all, in terms of Batwoman, would not exist in her current form if not for Daredevil and what's been done in those comics.
Saying, that's why I was thinking maybe right above Batwoman, because Batwoman owes a lot to Daredevil.
All right.
But Catwoman, I think, speaking of versatile characters, maybe gets the edge.
All right, so entering the list at number 18, Daredevil, Matthew Murdock.
Next on Josh's list is Helena Bertinelli, the Huntress.
Oh, okay, now that's a specific Huntress, Matt. That's modern age Huntress. That's, well, that is, post-crisis, yes. Huntress.
Correct, yes.
That Huntress is great. That Huntress is Daredevil. That Huntress is literally Daredevil.
This is not Batman's... What is it? Earth 2 Batman's daughter, the Huntress?
Yeah, that was Helena Wayne, who was Earth 2 Batman's daughter, who's fine. But this would be Helena Bertinelli, the modern-age Huntress, who was... the child of mobsters who watched her family die in front of her. She's Daredevil, and she's also the reverse Punisher.
Correct.
And she's also a teacher. I love her. I think she's great. I think she's a hoot.
The one thing that is no fault of the characters, but is certainly the fault of creators, is nobody has on many, many, many tries figured out what the fuck Huntress should wear.
That is true. She's gone through some weird costumes, but I do think that, like, you know, Matt, you know about my bias towards the mid to late 90s of DC Comics. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with it. That is the best Huntress suit. Like, the full body one that has the, like, purple kind of V accents on it. The one that's, like, you know, the protective suit. The sort of Jim Lee redesign, with all due respect to Jim Lee, sucks. It's one of the worst costumes, the one that's like the short shorts and the Silver Age style mask. Like, that thing is a trash pile of a suit.
Is that her Birds of Prey costume with the midriff?
It's the midriff, yeah. No, she was in the Birds of Prey a little bit with the late 90s costume. But yeah, her Hush era costume is rough stuff, my dog. Rough stuff.
Super no good.
From a design standpoint, I think we've seen her with good designs, but that were also like very 1998 designs, you know? That suit could not look more... In the way that her original suit couldn't look more like Bronze Age Earth 2 and her sort of return suit could not look more like early 90s. That suit could not look more like it was something in a Grant Morrison JLA book, you know?
Yeah. I will say, and you can disagree with me on this, but I feel like Helena Bertinelli Huntress works best as a character on a team.
I think she works best when she's got someone to push off of. You know, we've had the Wolverine conversation.
Yeah.
About your opinions on Wolverine and how he only really works when he's reacting to, you know, Cyclops or someone else. Like when he can be the wild card of a team as opposed to being a solo character. I don't think Huntress only works as part of a team, but I do definitely think that Huntress works best in stories where we see her pushing off of someone, whether it's Barbara Gordon, whether it's Batman, whether it's the Justice League, whether it's the Question in the really good Greg Rucka miniseries. Like, I think that is certainly true of her, but I think that's because she is a weird DC Comics version of Punisher and Daredevil and, like, very kind of Marvel-style characters. I think it makes her work in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, I think she even works really well as a member of, like, Batman Inc.
Yes.
When she was in that. I mean, it's not to say that she can't work as a solo character, but when I think of Helena Bertinelli, I immediately think of Birds of Prey. That's directly where I go.
And, I mean, I think it's a fair cop too.
Yeah, not only how she plays off of Barbara Gordon, but also how she plays off of Black Canary on that mm-hmm. team. When she plays a very vital role in that team.
Yeah. I like her a lot, though. I think she brings something to the, you know, especially the Batman corner of the universe that is, if not necessarily, like, game-changingly innovative, like, it's certainly something we don't see from, like, brought out in that character. Like, I like the idea that she, you know, what would the Punisher look like in the DC universe? Well, he'd be this lady who is a teacher by day because she has a secret identity. And also she's a part, you know, her family was mobsters.
I do think that the use of her in Grayson is really clever.
Yes.
And the role that she plays there is a good updating of that character.
Yeah, I feel like that's still a Helena Bertinelli, but that is a different character. Matron Helena Bertinelli.
Right.
That is, like, so super good. Like, she is one of the few, like, updated New 52 versions of a character that I like that I was genuinely excited to see.
And she's joined the Birds of Prey now since the start of Rebirth, so she is still Helena Bertinelli, who has that little crossbow thing and all that stuff. But where do you think Huntress goes? I think she probably goes below Black Canary.
I don't know. Like, I really, like, I think Black Canary has the edge in terms of longevity, you know, Black Canary being around for 70 fucking years. But I would rather read a Huntress story than a Black Canary story, a Rogue story, like, where you get into trouble is Tim Drake, who I think is objectively a better character in all ways that matter.
I'm going down the list, I'm trying to... Do you think she's better or worse than Kate Bishop?
If it wasn't for, like, the last 2 years of, like, Kate Bishop, Private Eye, I would say the Huntress was better, but the past few years of Kate Bishop have been really fucking good.
In that Kate Bishop neighborhood is Kate Bishop, Ms. Marvel, Supergirl, Kim Pine, Cyclops, Plastic Man, Mr. Fantastic, Deadpool, Tommy Monahan, John Constantine, Swamp Thing, Kingpin.
I think she's better than Tommy. Tommy's a really good character, but, like, she's on the level of Tommy. I don't know if she's better or worse.
I mean, I don't think I'd put her above Deadpool. So it's up to you to decide, better or worse than Tommy Monahan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she goes above Deadpool because Huntress doesn't pay my bills, son. I'm gonna say Huntress by a crossbow bolt beats Tommy Monahan. But that's a good character.
Yep. Fourth here on Josh's list is Hank McCoy, the Beast.
Oh, man. You talking about the Dr. Hank McCoy, Matt?
That is who I'm talking about.
I love that guy. Probably my second favorite of the original. Honestly, probably my favorite of the original X-Men, because Jean is terrible in the original X-Men.
She gets a lot better, but in that original, In that original X-Men, yes, Marvel Girl is not great.
Yeah, not so good. Not so good is old Marvel Girl in that original run. Again, as we always say, through no fault of their own. You know, there's a really interesting experiment of people doing just Kirby stuff from that era. And that's not like, not to take sides in Stan versus Jack or anything, because we've talked about Stan. Stan was a valuable ingredient in early Marvel. Like, it can almost not be overstated how important Stan was. But there's so many, like, panels of, like, Professor X psychically instructing Jean on what to do, that if you take away the narration that Stan wrote, it's like Jean figuring things out for herself. Professor X going like, look around, Jean. Look, there's a thing you can use to free yourself. And it's like, hey, maybe she could have figured that out, yeah. My guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Beast. Interesting thing about, to give Stan his credit, Beast was originally characterized basically like the Hulk. You know, he was the big, the big dumb guy. And then Stan realized that he kind of had two of those characters with Hulk and Thing. And that's why Beast became smart, because he wanted something to distinguish him. So Beast being the kind of big, smart guy comes in, not in X-Men 1, but in 2 or 3, because he's like he's just hanging out reading like an advanced chemistry textbook or something. And I think that is a moment that Beast takes this really interesting idea of, oh, what if he was a big Hulk guy, but he was, smart and pretty chill, and makes it really work.
He's the only Marvel monster. I don't want to say he's not tortured, but he's certainly not as tortured as the Thing in the Hulk. He's a little more happy-go-lucky than both of those guys.
Yeah, I like when the Beast gets to be the monstrous character who enjoys being who he is. And there's it's kind of, the interesting piece of the X-Men metaphor is that, Beast is a guy who's super, like, he doesn't necessarily think of himself as this tragic figure. He's just, just a dude who's really smart and has fun and was an Avenger for a little bit,
Yeah, and palled around with other characters sort of on his own outside of the X-Men.
Yeah.
He was one of the only crossover characters who joined the Avengers from the X-Men side of things way before that was a thing, way before Wolverine did it.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the testament to how he ranks among those original five characters, was that he was the only one who got to go into another more popular book when the X-Men were really in the doghouse at Marvel. The only one that they were like, hey, maybe we should use this guy, was Beast.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's good. He's hard to write, I'll tell you that. He is tough to write.
Well, smart characters in general
are pretty hard to write.
All that smart guy dialogue in his mouth, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing that's as hard to write as a guy who's smarter than you are. It's the worst.
I mean, I don't think he supersedes like Storm and Wolverine.
Storm,
but he certainly goes above Iceman.
Yeah, oh yeah, he goes above Iceman in a fucking walk. Sorry, Bobby. But Iceman's way down at 134. I think Beast is going to do a much better than that. Here's an interesting question I never thought I'd have to ask, Matt. Is Beast better or worse than Garfield?
Beast is better than Garfield.
Okay. Is he better than President Calvin Ellis of Earth-23?
I would say so. As much as I love Calvin Ellis, he's only got a handful of stories. I mean, I'm going back up to where Rogue and Kitty Pryde and Nightcrawler are.
I don't think he beats any of them.
Okay.
I like him, but I don't think he beats Rogue, Kitty, or Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler, the character that I like more than any other, when people ask us to draw somebody for him, and I'm like, who's your favorite X-Man? It's always fucking Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler is great. Absolutely great. What about Cable? What about in comparison to Cable?
this might split us, Matt, because I think Cable's great. I say Cable's better.
I think,
but Beast, I recognize.
I think Beast that probably that edges out Cable.
Okay. Okay. So who do we have by Cable?
Jesse Custer is above. Kingpin is above. Swamp Thing. John Constantine.
I think we could probably put Beast above Swamp Thing.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. I talk about Alec Holland. So entering list number 58 is going to be Beast, Henry, Hank, McCoy.
The last one here on Josh's list is Popeye the Sailor Man.
This is going to be a tough one, Matt. How many Popeye comics have you read?
Not a lot.
They're great.
They're
super fucking weird.
I've read some of the more recent Popeye comics.
The Roger Langridge stuff is, like, legitimately great. But I, like, Popeye's a weird one, because I hate Popeye in cartoons, and those comics are kind of amazing.
They're so weird, though. Are you talking about the comic strips? They're so weird.
I'm talking about the I guess Sagendorf ones.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, the kind of like 40s, 50s ones that were reprinted by IDW in the Popeye Classics. Those are real weird comics. Like the Sea Witch is in those, Matt? The Sea Witch?
The Sea Hag. The thing about those comics is they're so different from the Popeye cartoons. Like, the Popeye cartoons follow a very set formula, right?
Yeah.
Where
a very set, very not super good formula.
Yeah, where Olive Oil is menaced somehow by Bluto. Popeye has to rescue her after eating some spinach. And it's just, you know, whatever led up to those circumstances is what happened in that cartoon. Except for the mega racist ones that were World War II comics. Or cartoons. The Popeye comic strips are these weird gag strips that are very talky. Where it's like Popeye with Wimpy. Or Popeye with Olive Oil. Or Popeye just kind of talking to somebody. Sweet Pea is in a lot of those comics. They're weird. They're not what you would think a Popeye comic would be.
And the versions of them that are currently available are beautiful. Because they're those big fantagraphics, like newspaper-sized books, which is how I've read them. But they're, like, so fucking weird, dude. Like, but I think they're, in terms of like how they work and in terms of content and everything, they are, I mean, they're essentially like the Scrooge McDuck comics, just not as good.
Yeah.
Like, they are essentially like as far from those characters as they exist in the cartoons as Scrooge McDuck was from like Donald Duck cartoons, you know, until like DuckTales.
So I think if we had Scrooge McDuck on this list, he would probably beat out Popeye, for sure.
Do we not have Uncle Scrooge McDuck, the last of Clan McDuck?
We do not have Scrooge McDuck on this list at this
Unbelievable.
Point. I think we can safely say that Popeye would have gone below him. Where do you think Popeye could go?
Well, Matt, he's strong to the finish. We know that about him.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, I just asked you this question. I mean it as seriously now as I did then. Is Popeye better than Garfield?
That's a tough one.
I weirdly don't think he is.
Yeah.
I would rather read Popeye stories than Garfield comics, but I find like Garfield to be an infinitely fascinating character and cultural force.
Yeah. Yeah. Popeye stories in the normal sense are very formulaic and boring.
Yes.
Now some of those comic strips we were talking about are weird and different, but Popeye stories tend to be very formulaic. Like, I don't think he's a better character than like Prometheus.
I do like Prometheus. He's not as good as Lord Deathman. He's not as good as Parker, but I think he's weirdly comparable to Parker.
Do you want to put him right below Parker, above Johnny Sorrow?
Yeah, let's do that. That feels right.
Okay.
Popeye the Sailor Man, entering the list at number 132. He's a sailor and a man.
All right, if we are going to rank as many characters as we said we were, we've got to really go through these next couple lists fast. This one is from Seth Finkel.
Do some fucking speed run tactics, Matt. Let's do this.
This one's from Seth Finkelstein, or Steen, which has some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for us to rank, starting with Phil Coulson.
I got nothing for Phil Coulson.
Yeah, he's not... He's the rare character who came to comics from another medium. He comes mm-hmm. from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have a huge role to play in comics because there's so many other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents who play those roles. And we'll get to them in a minute.
I feel like... What's his name? Clark Gregson? Whatever his name is? Greg Clarkson?
Yeah, I think it's Clark Gregson. Or it might be Greg Clarkson. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That guy seems nice. I think he did a good job. I think Coulson did some like interesting stuff in those movies. Coulson having to die to get the Avengers together is like still like maybe the weirdest fucking most unlikely biggest example of the Avengers being really fucking unlikable in that movie. It's just
Clark Gregg.
Clark Gregg. That's him.
Yeah.
Clark Gregson. Good old GPPS.
No son. He's just Clark Gregg.
Right, Greg Clarkson. Phil Coulson. Yeah, but in the comics, like that is a role that should have belonged to Jimmy Woo or Gabe Jones or literally anyone. Like it could have been Maria Hill. Maria Hill's in the movies. I don't understand why she wasn't.
There's an infinite number of other S.H.I.E.L.D. agents who were already in the comics that you could have used.
Yeah. And I'm not quite sure why they aren't used. But, I mean, I know why they're not now. It's because Coulson exists. But I don't know why they weren't used then, at the time.
All right, here's a character that I think is comparable to Phil Coulson.
All right, hit me up, my dude.
Crusher Hogan.
You tell me you think Phil Coulson would lose a hand to this business, brother?
I actually think Phil Coulson probably goes below Crusher Hogan. Because below him we have the Technician, the Beyonder, Boomerang, Lila Laryl, Baron Mordo, and then we hit Adam Warlock.
Okay, I think he's better than Adam Warlock.
Me too. Like, these are characters who are pretty good, and then you hit Adam Warlock. Like, then you hit a clear line where it's just like, I do not like these characters. And that is where Adam Warlock sits.
Yeah. Yeah. That is legit.
Well, Coulson and I just have nothing for, so there you go.
I just, like, what role does he fill that is not already, what role does he occupy? That is not already Phil Coulsoned by someone else.
Yeah,
is my question.
Well, we're gonna get to this.
Jimmy Woo at?
We're gonna get to some. Jimmy Woo. We're gonna get a few of the someone else's here in a second.
All right, so let's go ahead and put him. I mean, are we putting him just above Adam Warlock?
Yes,
because like I think Baron Mordo is better.
I do too.
Phil Coulson's a lot like Baron Mordo, because Baron Mordo's only there for you to be like, oh shit, here comes Dormammu. But, like, Phil Coulson's only there for you to be like, oh shit, we're going to see Nick Fury in a minute.
Yeah, that's 100% true.
Going to get about a hot minute of Nick Fury.
Next on Seth's list is another character that could have filled that Phil Coulson role, Veronica Hand.
She would have been a really interesting Phil Coulson.
Yeah.
Ms. Hand, I guess, is, like, there's, like, a, is there a joke in her name that was never kind of gotten around to?
It might actually be in those Dark Reign comics somewhere.
Yeah. Cause she, but she was like a Cobra character, right? In that she was just there, like, getting her check. Like, she's Norman Osborn's assistant, but she is not herself evil, right?
There's a very Baroness look and feel to her.
Yeah, well, she's got the hair and she's got the glasses, but she's also just like, she's kind of just there getting her check, working for, because somebody's got to work for Hammer, you know?
Right, right. She's not actually, I mean, she was a S.H.I.E.L.D. person at the start, but then she became, like, the head, I don't know what her exact title was in Hammer, but she was basically Norman Osborn's assistant. She was doing all the organizing for Norman Osborn.
Yeah, she's, like, weirdly, I think she's more interesting than Phil Coulson, despite having done arguably much less. Like, I think she's interesting because I have a genuine love, as you know. Like I think there's two kinds of characters that you and I both have, like a love for. It's that you love loser villains.
Sure. The ineffectual scoundrel.
Yeah. And I love the supervillain for work. Like, I love day job supervillains. People who are working, like, henchmen. I love henchmen who are just there getting a check.
Or the kind of, like, I mean, the ineffectual scoundrel can fit that category sometimes.
Yeah, where for sure.
They'll just work for the paycheck and they don't really care about the cause. The thing about Victoria Hand, though, is, and I always thought this as I was reading those New Avenger stories and those Dark Avenger stories, she always seemed to be hiding something, right?
Yeah, she had, like, that air of mystery that felt like, oh, in a little bit we're gonna find out about Victoria Hand, and I honest to God don't know if we ever found out literally anything about Victoria Hand.
Yeah, we found out she was working for Captain America.
Did we?
Yeah.
Is that a thing that happened? I have no idea, Matt.
It is a thing that happened. Like, she did a double cross.
What's her name from X-Men? Sage.
Yeah.
She saged it.
She saged it. Because she was, Norman Osborn was telling her to pretend to work for Captain America.
Uh-huh.
But then she was pretending to work for Norman Osborn as she was really working for Captain America.
Huh. Weird. Okay. All right. Okay.
So she All ended right. up. She ended up helping bring Hammer down in the end. That's like, she's a big part of the end of the Dark Avengers stuff.
Well, look, we're spending a lot of time talking about Victoria Hand, who has appeared in, like, maybe 20 comics as a major player. Above Phil Coulson, like, where do you put her against, like, a Carly Cooper? Like, a mostly, like, background player who gets, like, upgraded at some point, but then doesn't really stick around.
She's weirdly comparable to, I mean, not even weirdly, she's just comparable to Carly Cooper. I like her a little more than Carly Cooper because she did have that air of mystery about her in a way that Carly did.
I like Carly Cooper.
I mean, yeah. I do too. I mean, I don't think I'd put her above, like, Multiple Man.
Now, right below Multiple Man is Angela, who I think by our own admission we both have not read a ton of.
Angela is, like, another one. Angela is another one that I have nothing for. At least Victoria Hand was interesting. In a way that I don't find Angela interesting.
Oof, that's a harsh call on Angela, but I'll let you do it. So below Angela, above Carly Cooper,
above Angela, below Multiple Man.
Enters the list at number 175, Matt.
All right. Next on Seth's list is Sharon Carter.
Was she Agent 13? Dick Grayson was Agent 13, but was Sharon Carter also Agent 13?
Yes, she was Agent 13. Yes.
Yeah. Man, where's that amalgam comic?
The Grayson Sharon Carter amalgam?
Yeah, hell, would you not read that? I would read the fudge out of that book.
Sure, I'd read that book. Let me tell you what did Sharon Carter so much good. The Ed Brubaker run on Captain America.
Yeah, she's real good in that. She is real good in that. She's a good hand in that. Yeah, I like Sharon Carter. I think Sharon Carter is Not to reduce her to just being a love interest, but among, like, the Captain America love interest characters, Sharon Carter's the best. Honestly, Peggy's probably the best now, but Sharon Carter in the comics is probably the best.
It's that Brubaker run on Captain America, though, that makes her more than a love interest. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, certainly there were, I think she had, if not her own Agent 13 series briefly, certainly backups or something like that. I know that she had, like, certain Agent 13 stories where she was the lead character.
Yeah, she was a key player in a bunch of stuff.
But, and you know, she had her own stuff going on in, like, some of the separate S.H.I.E.L.D. books or the Nick Fury books or whatever. Mm-hmm. But she really came into her own after Captain America died.
Yes.
And when Bucky became Captain America, because she had to kind of prop Bucky up, right? Like, she became as important as, you know, Bucky and Falcon.
Now, when you say after Captain America died, you mean after Sharon Carter killed him?
Under the mind control of the Red Skull, correct.
So, yeah. Sharon Carter's really good in that. I think she had been good before, but she definitely, like, as a solo character, really benefited from that. And I think now she's, like, super aged, right? Like, from being in Dimension Z?
I don't know if she's been brought back to her normal age now or not. But she was also, I remember her being really good, like, in some of the Heroes Return stuff, like the Mark Waid run right after.
Oh, yeah. In fucking Man Without a Country, which is right before Heroes Return, she's, like, really fucking good in that shit.
She's a really good character. I think she's, like, in the top tier of like, what you might call supporting characters, even though she's had some heroic stories of her own.
I mean, I don't think she goes, like, does she go above, like, a Livewire, who we have at, like, 155? Like, does she go above Livewire?
I would put her above Livewire, yeah.
Where would you put her as far as, like, where would you start? What's your floor on Sharon Carter?
Like, I mean, I think she beats out Parker.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, maybe comparable to Spoiler or Boom Boom.
Interesting. A character who could not be further from Spoiler. So that's you're saying, like, Boom Boom is the floor, or Parker is the floor?
Parker is the floor, I think. I mean, but I could put her as high as, you know, Alana Lang.
Really?
Sure.
That's surprising. I would say, that's tough. I don't think she's as good as Lana Lang. I think she has to go under Lana Lang. I think you could make the argument that she is better than Dr. Simon Hurt. A.K.A. the Black Glove, A.K.A. Thomas Wayne, A.K.A. Darkseid's Hyperadapter, A.K.A. Mangrove Pierce, A.K.A. Barbatos. I think you could maybe do that.
How about this? I don't think she goes above Simon Hurt. I don't think she goes above Thanos. I don't think she goes above Husk or Cheryl Blossom. But I could put her above Annihilus?
Then I think that's where we put her. I think we put her below Calvin Ellis, above Annihilus.
Yep, I think that's good.
All right, Sharon Carter in his list number 108. A very good showing that I did not expect.
Next on Seth's list is Maria Hill.
I like Maria Hill a lot. What S.H.I.E.L.D. really needed at the time of Maria Hill, and I think the reason a lot of people reacted poorly to Maria Hill, was S.H.I.E.L.D. needed to have a character who was going to be a little adversarial and be a little like no, you can't just go do this. Like, that is not a thing.
Yeah.
And I think Maria Hill did a bang-up job as that character.
Well, Maria Hill had to come up and be the not Nick Fury, right?
Yes. Maria Hill shows up as Nick Fury's immediate successor.
Yeah, Nick Fury, who would always bend the rules and let the superheroes do whatever they wanted. Mm-hmm. And she's the one who's like, no, we need to do this by the rules. Like, we need to, yeah. You can't just do whatever the fuck you want. Yeah, I mean, in that regard, I like Maria Hill a lot. I don't think that folks have figured out what to do with Maria Hill since then. She had some good stuff in like the Fraction Iron Man run.
That's what I was going to bring up, is like that Iron Man run does a really good job of using her and like giving her a relationship with Tony Stark in a way that doesn't just make her Tony Stark's girlfriend, you know, which is like the real danger of having a character who's like a supporting character who doesn't really have her own book, like show up and be like get involved in this romantic relationship. But I think it works really well. Because the romantic relationship in which she gets involved with Tony Stark is a weird one. Like, it's super weird. Yeah. That dude resets his brain at the end of their relationship. And so he doesn't remember it, and she does. And I think that actually worked out really well. I think it speaks well of her character that she, you know, and of that comic in general, that her character was strong enough to kind of get through that. Without it being like, oh yeah, she's one of Tony's exes, which I think under lesser writers would have been a very easy, unfortunate place to go with her.
I do think, though, that with Maria Hill, when you create a character who is a specifically designed to fill a particular role, and in this case her role was to take over as the new director of S.H.I.E.L.D. when Nick Fury was MIA, and she has filled that role again since then, when Nick Fury was seemingly dead. But when there is a Nick Fury who comes back, whether it's Nick Fury Senior or Nick Fury Junior, there's not a lot to do with her. Like, she kind of flounders. Like, we see her like maybe sitting on a tribunal somewhere, or she opened that prison, right? But, like, aside from that, there's just – she's maybe, like, at best in the background at S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, she's not going around and doing stuff. Like, maybe she'll be part of Secret Warriors when that starts up again. But, like
– well, like she's not James Bond, so she's M, you know? Like, she has to be the one in charge giving orders. Like, that's, you know, when we did our Nick Fury story, that's how we wrote her. She's M. She's the one in the earpiece. Which I think, you know, you can do interesting things with a character like that, and it's kind of a necessary character to have, you know? Everybody can't be Bond. And if you're doing a story about Nick Fury, somebody's got to be M. But I do think that you're right. Like, when there's a Nick Fury around, she always ends up kind of stepping into the background. Whereas I don't know if would you read a Maria Hill like solo spy story, like doing James Bond stuff?
Maybe. I mean, it would depend on the creative team and like the premise.
Yeah.
But you'd have to sell me on it. I wouldn't read it just because it was a Maria Hill story.
Yeah. Which I think that's the thing about doing panel president. We like consider the characters above everything else. On that front, I don't know. I think Maria Hill goes.
Here's where I'm.
I don't think she goes as high as Sharon Carter, obviously, but I think she goes above Victoria Hand.
I think she goes between Elijah Snow, who I would read a solo book about, and Anna Maria Marconi.
I mean, that sounds like a pretty decent place. So entering the list number 172, Maria Hill.
Finally here on Seth's list is Dum Dum Dugan.
Matt, let me tell you something about Dum Dum Dugan. Dum Dum Dugan was in command of the, I believe it was called the Dreadnought. Now, do you know what the Dreadnought is?
Remind me of what the Dreadnought is.
Oh, that's the helicarrier that fights Godzilla. He's the S.H.I.E.L.D. guy who fights Godzilla. Like, when they had to go fight Godzilla in the Marvel Universe, he's the dude they called.
I mean, that's the thing about Dum Dum Dugan, right? He's the man of action. He's the leader of the away team. You know? He's not the guy in charge sitting around on the helicarrier all the time, even though he's often Nick Fury's right-hand man.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the guy who goes out in the field.
Yeah, he does stuff that, like, you can't do with Nick Fury. Because again, he's Shield's Commander Riker.
He is absolutely the Commander Riker of Shield.
And I'm into that.
The thing, here's the other thing about Dum Dum Dugan. It should be the dumbest thing in the world that he's like this secret agent guy with this like old fashioned mustache and bowler hat, but it's fucking great.
Like, and it's such a, no one is as obviously a character held over from war comics and put into spy comics than Dum Dum Dugan. Cause he's just the guy. Like, he's just the same fucking guy.
Except for maybe Nick Fury.
No, because I think Nick Fury becomes something different, right? Nick Fury becomes a weird spy character. Dum Dum Dugan is just like, his name's fucking Dum Dum, Matt. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
He is exactly that guy from the war comics. Like, yeah. He's just wearing a different...
He's got the fucking hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just gave him a paunch.
He was smoking cigars all the time until a couple years ago, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think of the Howling Commandos characters, he is my second favorite, I would say. The old leftovers.
Yeah.
So I think he's gonna go. I think he's probably gonna go. Maybe not as high as Sharon Carter, but not too much below.
There's not. I mean, you're not hearing about any of the other Howling Commandos much anymore. You're not hearing about Pinky Pinkerton anymore.
Nope. You sure don't. You sure don't hear about Pinky Pinkerton anymore. Wonder why that might be.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying not quite as high as Sharon Carter?
Maybe not. But I think he's, you know who I think he's pretty comparable to? Crypto the Superdog.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. Do you think he's better than Extraño?
I think he's, over in terms of overall appearances, yes.
Okay.
Like we moved Extraño up quite a bit. But let's not forget, that's based on just a few very recent, very good appearances. I think Extraño has been rehabbed to the point where he could be a really, really good character, and a very important character, but I feel like we're waiting for that to happen. We have 17 issues of Godzilla, Matt. We have them.
That's true. You're right about that.
I say below Crypto, above Extraño.
All right, that sounds good to me.
Number 111 on the list, Dum Dum Dugan.
So let's knock out one more list if we can do it.
Okay.
Now, this list comes from Jordan Bloom, and two of these characters we've already ranked. So we only have to do three. Because we've already ranked MODOK, and we've already ranked Magneto. These are some of his favorite Marvel villains besides Doctor Doom, okay?
Okay.
Here's who's left on the list besides MODOK and Magneto. Mystique.
Now, are these all M villains?
No, they're not.
Okay.
Three of them are.
Okay. Now, Matt, are you talking about Raven Darkholm?
I'm talking about Rogue's mom.
Talking about Nightcrawler's mom?
Yes.
Or are we not talking about Nightcrawler's mom? I think we might not be.
I mean, it depends on what you want to believe.
I think that might be a real not talking about that right now situation. Here's what's great about Mystique. Mystique couldn't look like anything and chooses to have skulls on her belt.
You know it.
She lived that gimmick like she was working for Jim Cornette, brother. Did you ever read that Mystique solo series by Brian K. Vaughan that had those like either Mike Mayhew or Greg Horn covers? Like,
I did read that series. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of interesting ideas in there. A lot of weird ideas too. I did like the statement in that series that the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants name was ironic, which I thought was fun and a very Brian K. Vaughan joke. But like, I feel like that series also kind of pushed Mystique to a point that is difficult for her to come back from, which is at one point she grows like multiple arms and has an Uzi in each hand, which is cool, but then you are forced to ask the question of why she doesn't do that all the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That is fair. There's a certain point where Mystique's shape-shifting, I think you have to draw the line on it, where it can't be she can't do everything. And sometimes it seems like she is capable of doing everything. And being anybody at any time. And changing her body into anything that is necessary for the story for her to do. And so sometimes you have to draw that back a little bit. But I also think that's one of the coolest powers.
I see. I had never, like, I find shapeshifting to be a generally very frustrating power. Because I feel like it doesn't, like, it doesn't play fair. And I say that as someone who, like, defo used Mystique to trick readers in an X-Men comic. But, like, it is, as a reader, a thing that I always think is frustrating. I was like, oh, that was Mystique. Okay, fine. Well, all right.
There's a difference between using it as a cop-out and using it creatively.
No, I mean, like, yeah, like, I don't think it's always necessarily a cop-out, but I do think it's always necessarily something that, you know, the reader can't know until you tell them.
Sure. Unless you want to tell them up front and make it a dramatic irony thing where the reader knows but the characters don't. Like, there's a way to do it. I mean, there have been numerous creative ways to use Mystique's shapeshifting, I think. I don't think it's a... Certainly it's not a knock on the character or a liability that that's her power and that she can do that. I mean, part of it is, like, Mystique, in addition to being a shapeshifter, is also ageless and almost impossibly old and incredibly powerful in other ways, where she gets to the point of seeming to be overpowered.
Yeah, in a really weird way. And she's also part of that, you know, that weird web of connections to other X-Men characters. Like, again, she's Rogue's mom. Now, I will say, all of this said, I kind of love that Rogue's mom is Mystique and her other mom is Destiny. That's one of my favorite things in comic books. I think that is delightful. I love to imagine the family dinners with Rogue and Destiny and Mystique and maybe Nightcrawler and maybe the Devil. And I think that's like a really interesting thing that, you know, that they were, like, even back in the day, canonical life partners.
This is a distinction that I don't think many people make.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're such different characters with different ends, and a lot of times Mystique is considered to be secondary to him in terms of importance. But I feel like Mystique and Magneto are very similar.
Okay.
In that they can cross that line between villain and hero sometimes, and do cross that line sometimes. And they both have powers that can get to the point of being too much. Like, you can get to the point where Magneto can do too much. If you're like, oh, you know, he can basically pick up and move anything, because we can say that virtually anything has, you know, a component of metal in it, right? It's not just magnetism anymore. It's like he can do anything with metal, right? And Mystique, by that same token, if she can do anything with her shapeshifting, then she is capable of way more than maybe is good for stories. And they both have very tortured pasts, and they both can be tragic characters. They're both sometimes very sympathetic. And they don't do things just to be the bad guy. They do things because they have particular agendas that go toward particular ends. And so, even though I don't think people often think of Mystique as kind of on par with Magneto, I kind of feel like she is.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're pretty spot on with that. So where do we put her on the list?
I mean, I don't think she gets as high as Magneto.
Yeah. Like, no, I think you're not wrong. But I think she's a character that I appreciate without being like a super huge fan of. Like, I'm not generally excited to see Mystique show up. unless it's in a book I'm writing.
As much as I just made that argument that she's similar to Magneto, I don't think she goes above Magneto. I don't think she goes above Kingpin.
I think it's because we always see Mystique as a team player. Like, she's almost always part of the Brotherhood. She's almost always linked up to Rogue and Nightcrawler. So, like, where do we, like, without that, like, she's not generally as appealing. Like, you know, I talked about that Mystique solo series, which was I thought was a pretty good book, but certainly didn't, like, it wasn't as memorable as a lot of her other appearances when she's been part of a group. And I think maybe that's a thing that holds her back.
Better or worse than Emma Frost?
I like Emma better. I think Emma takes that easily.
I think maybe I would put her right below Emma.
Above Hercules?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I got a dog in this fight, so I'm going with what you're saying. But number 66, Mystique, Raven Darkholm.
I think Hercules definitely had that run of stories that we loved. But for a lot of Hercules' existence, he was a boring Avenger. He was not Thor, right?
I mean, that's true. You're not wrong.
Next up on Jordan's list is Dr. Octopus.
Talking about Doc Ock?
I'm talking about Otto Octavius.
You talking about maybe the worst civilian name in comic books?
I mean, Victor Von Doom is also pretty bad.
No, Victor Von Doom is great. The only time I have ever, like, heard a line in a movie where somebody's, like, kind of clowning on a comic book thing for having a stupid name is in Spider-Man 2, when J. Jonah Jameson cannot believe this guy's name is really Otto Octavius. Like, it's the only time I've been like, yep, that is what a person would say when encountering that name.
That is true, yes. But that's a thing where it's his real name that they're clowning on, not the code name that they're clowning on, where it's like Green Arrow. Pfft.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
Dr. Octopus should not work at all.
I don't necessarily think that's true. I don't necessarily think that he shouldn't work at all, but I think it was always weird to me as a kid that he was considered Spider-Man's arch enemy. Like, as opposed to literally every other person he fights who are also, like, weird animal name assholes. Like, why is Dr. Octopus the Spider-Man villain? Because I feel like when we were growing up in the late 80s and 90s, like, he was absolutely the guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was the Spider-Man villain because Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, was dead.
Yeah. But Doc Ock's also the guy who traps him under the heavy shit in the final chapter. That's sure. A Doc Ock story. That's the thing people don't remember about that story. That's a fucking Doc Ock story.
But, like, there's like, so many Doc Ock stories that are, like, so weird and, so, like, well, I mean, probably the most recent big Spider-Man story that was, like, the biggest threat to Spider-Man was a Doc Ock story that turned into Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah. Like it makes sense to me now that Dr. Octopus would be, like, the guy since Superior Spider-Man happened. But it was always bananas to me as a kid. Where it's like, it's really this guy who's just going to get his glasses fucking webbed up? Because, Matt, he wears glasses.
And they would get webbed up.
And his glasses get webbed up, and then in these fucking done, son.
I guess there's something to be said for, like, the spider-octopus symbolism, where they're both eight-legged creatures. But really what it is just that Dr. Octopus is a scientist. And Spider-Man is a scientist. And so instead of just having to, like, come up with some clever way to web up a strong guy, Spider-Man often has to match wits with Dr. Octopus. Mm-hmm. In a way that he doesn't have to with other villains.
Yeah, that's true, I guess. But that kind of leads to him being a weird, getting into it with the Fantastic Four. Like, the weird thing about, the FF trying to call in Doc Ock to save, is it Franklin or Val? It's Franklin, right?
Yeah, it's Franklin.
Yeah. Cause they got a cosmically radioactive baby. They need a radiation expert with four adamantium arms to come and deal with. Yeah, I don't know. It's always been weird to me that he's that guy. But that doesn't mean I don't like him. Like, I like him just fine.
Well, do we like him more than the Green Goblin?
I mean, my instinct is no, but I've probably read more comics with Doc Ock than they, like, Doc Ock did put in the work. Like Norman Osborn was dead for a real long time.
Yeah.
And again, like, I think you've read more Superior Spider-Man than I have. Like, how do you, like, that's a major story. So how does that, like, affect him?
I mean, it's good. But really, more than Superior Spider-Man, the build-up to Superior Spider-Man really cements Doc Ock as not just that goofy guy with glasses that gets them webbed up, but as, like, a serious nemesis to Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are other stories that have done that, too. But by the same token, Doc Ock is still the same guy who's, like, going to marry Aunt May and take her money.
I forgot he was going to marry Aunt May and take her money. I did, in fact, forget that major storyline.
Yep.
That was canonical. That's a thing that happened. Oh, poor Nathan Lipchansky. Never had a chance.
Here's my suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
Doc Ock goes directly above Norman Osborn.
So you're saying, directly... No, that puts him directly under Lucy Van Pelt.
Yes.
You're okay with that?
Yes.
All right. Dr. Octopus, Otto Octavius, enters the list at number 35. Matt, that's seven spots higher than Captain Marvel, Billy Batson. My dude loves villains.
Finally on Jordan's list is Ultron.
Ultron could not be, like, more of a mixed bag, could he?
It's true. There's maybe two really, really great Ultron stories.
Yeah. Yeah. There's Ultron Unlimited.
Yep.
And there's that one where Daredevil beats him to death with a stick. Those are the two. That one where Daredevil beats him to death with a stick is fucking legit.
I would say that there's probably, you know, another decent Ultron story in there somewhere. But Ultron Unlimited is really it. Ultron Unlimited is the be-all and end-all of Ultron stories.
Yeah, I don't know how you do another Ultron story after you do Ultron Unlimited. That moment in Ultron Unlimited where they just finished fighting the Ultron with, like, the number 6 on his head or whatever it is. And they're like, oh, Jesus, that was tough. Like, we got him. We beat Ultron. And then, like, an Ultron 7 walks in, and then an Ultron 10 walks in, and then an Ultron 49 walks in, and then an Ultron 261 walks in. Like, that's about as good as, like, villain reveals get in comics.
They had to stop numbering Ultrons after that.
Yeah.
I believe it was like, Ultron 16 or something like that. I think Ultron 16 was like the main Ultron of that story. And then, and then all those other Ultrons show up and fuck. And that story just has that Thor panel where it's like, Ultron, we would have words with thee. And good God, motherfuck.
Yeah. George Perez on Avengers, greater than sign. George Perez on Teen Titans. I will stand by that. I will ride or die for George Perez, Kurt Busiek, Avengers. That's really the best Avengers run.
It is. It's like, it's really better, a greater than sign any other George Perez thing. And I like George Perez.
Hey, but look, that Avengers, I like George run, Perez too.
That Avengers run is top tier.
Yeah, it's. I would venture to say it's HQC.
It is indeed HQC.
It might be double A rank.
Yeah,
I don't think it's S rank.
Okay, it's S-rank. Pretty good. It's pretty.
But here's the problem. Here's the problem. Every other Ultron story,
they're not bad.
They're not bad, but like they're never going to get better than that.
They're never going to get better than that.
That's the last one. Like, if you read one, it should be. And I think that's a weird spot for a character to be. Like, a character who had been around for 40 years at that point, or 30 years, I guess, at that point, to have a story that I legitimately don't think anyone else could possibly top, and, like, even with all the Ultron stuff that we've seen since, like, has not topped that. You know, with all due respect, no one... I would be very hesitant to write, another Ultron story. Because I don't know, I don't know what I would do.
Well, what is better? What is a better thing to do with a robot character who can create new versions of himself than the story where he makes a million of himself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where he kills an entire country and makes hundreds and hundreds of himself, and the Avengers have to fight them all. Like, that's it. That is the best Ultron story, and everything since then has been. Like, okay, well, what do we do with Ultron now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, Victor Mancha was an Ultron, right? Because the deal was he was supposed to, like, going to turn out to be a Doctor Doom. But the trick was that he was actually an Ultron.
Yes.
That's good stuff. And you know, Santron. I can't believe we went this far without mentioning Santron. But Santron.
Sure.
That's Santron good stuff.
Santron was good. That's the thing you do with Ultron now. It's like... Who is this guy? Or what is this thing? Oh, shit, it's actually Ultron. These S.H.I.E.L.D. life model decoys are actually Ultrons. You got to do secret Ultrons now. Mm-hmm. Or that kind of ill-advised Mighty Avengers thing where it was like, now Ultron's a sexy lady. You remember that?
I don't.
It wasn't Jocasta. I can't remember.
It wasn't Jocasta.
It wasn't Jocasta. It was...
Because we did have... Now, if we wanted a sexy lady Ultron, we had one just laying around.
But Jocasta was good, right? Jocasta helped the Avengers, but then Jocasta got taken over by Ultron. And I guess that technically was Sexy Lady Ultron. But anyway, Ultron has that, like, one really, really great story. Two good stories. And the rest, just okay.
I would say, well, okay. The more we talk about it, the more I like him, honestly. Because Ultron Unlimited's really good. That story where he gets beat to death with a stick is really good. Santron's really good. I think those are going to be enough to get him to do pretty well on the old list here. Is Ultron in Marvel Comics better than Dracula in Marvel Comics? I would have difficulty saying so, but Ultron Unlimited is really good.
Yeah,
I also wouldn't know what to do with Marvel Comics Dracula now that I've done my thing.
I mean, I don't think I would put him above Dr. Hurt, Thanos, or Omega Red.
I think he goes right where Omega Red is.
Yeah, I do too. That's what I think, also. Above or below Omega Red?
Let's see. Anatoly Kiasnev, right? Or no, that's KG Beast. Arkady Rossovich is Omega Red. I think he goes below Thanos, above Omega Red?
I think that sounds good.
Below Omega Red, above Ultimate Spider-Man.
I would say above Omega Red, but I know how you feel about Omega Red. So I'm
He's scary, Matt. He's a scary.
Ultron's pretty scary. Ultron's pretty scary. He's got that big glowing red mouth.
Ultron have a mutant death factor. So entering list number 106 between Omega Red and Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultron, Hank Pym's greatest creation.
All right, that's going to do it for this panel president special. What did our list end up being? Not quite 240.
Matt, we made it to 230. Which I think is respectable.
230, okay. That's
we talked
bad.
A lot on this one.
We did talk a lot. We had a lot to say about these characters. If you would like to send us a panel president list, you can do so at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send every story ever lists to that email address. You can send listener questions there, or if you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there, or you can just drop us a line with whatever you want to say. You can also send listener questions to our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. And check us out on iTunes. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. The more positive reviews we get there, the more we are featured. And now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us online. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net. And by doing so, you can find a link to purchase Supreme Villainy, my brand new book, which is out next week. That's right. In just, I guess, like 8 or 9 short days, that book is going to be out. And I think you're going to like it. So if you would like to go pre-order it, you can find the link to do so at mattdwilson.net. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
Everybody can find my stuff by going to the-isb.com. There are links there to the comics that I write, to the stuff that I've written online, to all kinds of other fun stuff that I do, including other podcasts like Sailor Business and Xena Warrior Business. But hey, right at the top of that page, there is a link to where you can buy Deadpool Bad Blood. That's my latest project as of this recording. I might have an issue of Sword Quest or even maybe Army of Darkness out by then. Deadpool Bad Blood, in stores now. Hardcover, 100 pages, all original. Me, Chad, the Rob Liefeld, giving Deadpool a brand new villain. Check it out. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be extreme. It's going to be maximum, even. Pick it up and let me know what you think. I'm actually really excited. We're recording this the night before it comes out. So I am actually really excited to hear what people think about it.
Yeah, I'm very excited to read it when it does come out. I'm itching to read Deadpool Bad Blood. That's going to do it for this episode of War Rocket Ajax, everybody. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to all our rankings. We're going to be back with a regular episode of War Rocket Ajax next week, once we're all married and moved in.
Matt, and we're not getting married to or moving in with each other.
I mean, anything could happen in these 2 weeks.
I mean, that's true. Boy, that's going to be a weird one. If on Sunday I wake up and I'm married to Matt Wilson, but at least I get a new house.
Tune in next week to see what happened. I'm sure we'll talk about our eventful 2 weeks.
Oh, hey, Matt, real quick. How'd we do?
Oh, it was HQC. We love you.
Yeah! Flash.